the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi, Andy. I didn't think we would chat again so soon.
Hi. Well, thank you very much for inviting me back onto your program.
No, not a problem. We had a very good call last time, a very good interview. It was a really good way to summarize everything that happened, and I think you were very balanced about it. But I didn't expect to see the news I saw this week that you were kind of stepping away. So what's happened over the last few weeks since we spoke?
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago since we spoke. It feels like it was very recent. And before I sort of get into that, I said this at the time, but I'll kind of reiterate it because the feedback I had about the podcast that we did and the series you did was really, really positive. And I think what you did with that series was a real benefit to creditors. And I think if anyone hasn't caught it, it's worth, I mean, there's a lot of content there, but it's worth sort of churning your way through it. If you're a creditor, I think there's a lot of stuff that a lot of people didn't know. So a big thank you from on behalf of creditors. Certainly the creditors have been in touch with me about it to say that they found it really helpful. So a thank you to you, Peter, for that.
No worries.
In terms of what's happened at the time since then, so the sort of big the big epiphany for me, if you like, is I went to Tokyo for the creditors meeting. So every 6 months in the bankruptcy, the trustee holds a creditors meeting. So I've attended the last three, slowly been building up a relationship with the trustee as well. So we're now in a position where I get to have sort of private meetings with him and our lawyer. We get to discuss and share the thoughts that creditors from the group are putting forward. I mean, he doesn't sort of reveal anything that he wouldn't anyway. He can't sort of show preferential treatment to one set of creditors over another, but it is a good opportunity for a bit of dialogue and a bit of, to clarify things that are happening. And he also holds this public meeting. So there are a couple of big things that really happened when I was in Japan. The first thing was that at the public meeting, he announced that he was going to put civil rehabilitation on hold until the CoinLab case has been settled. So there's a little bit of background. Mt. Gox was in bankruptcy. Under bankruptcy, there's a big surplus of assets because of the price rise back in at the end of last year or the year before. And that surplus would have gone to Mark Karpeles and Jed McCallum under bankruptcy. So we as creditors have launched various legal processes to move the process from bankruptcy to what's called civil rehabilitation, which is a bit like re-establishing the company, but not as an exchange, as a functioning company, just as a legal entity that can then distribute assets fairly to the people that it owed money to. So that's been our goal. And we were heading that way, and it was looking all really positive. And it looked like around about April time, there would be a vote on the civil rehabilitation plan, and we would, as creditors, get to approve civil rehabilitation. And that would basically be our safe harbor. Once we get to that point, then we have a level of certainty in the process in terms of how much distribution there's going to be to creditors, and in terms of when that's going to happen. And really, until we get to that vote, there is uncertainty in that process. We don't know when it's going to end. We don't know how much the whole process is going to be worth for creditors with any certainty. So it was a frustration to find out that wasn't going to happen in April. But what was more concerning is the reason for that is that there is this case brought by CoinLab, who back in 2013 had an agreement to essentially be the franchise for Mt. Gox in the US, and that came with responsibilities in terms of licensing in the various states, which they either did or didn't need to have, depending on who side of the argument you listen on. But basically that agreement fell apart, and it kicked off a lawsuit between CoinLab and Mt. Gox. This all happened before Mt. Gox went into bankruptcy. And that lawsuit has mutated into a claim in the bankruptcy process. So back in 2014, CoinLab put in a $75 million claim against Mt. Gox. So along with all the people that lost money on the exchange, they were also saying to the trustee, you need to give us $75 million because that's what this contract was worth. But that case hasn't been decided yet. So there's a kind of an argument, some to and fro that needs to be had over whether or not they're entitled to that $75 million. Then when we moved to civil rehabilitation, when we started the process of moving to civil rehabilitation, CoinLab also had to resubmit. Everyone had to resubmit their claims. So all the creditors that were customers of Mt. Gox, we all resubmitted our claims. CoinLab also had to resubmit their claims. But lo and behold, between 2014 and last year, their claim has somehow grown from $75 million to $16 billion. So they are claiming $16 billion. Now, there's, in my eyes, no earthly reason how you can calculate the damages of this and come up with a number $65 million. It just, you know, it doesn't make sense. And to my perspective, it looks very much, and to a lot of creditors' perspective, it looks very much like a strategic approach where they're trying to, I have to be careful what I say because I don't want to get sucked into a lawsuit libeling CoinLab, but it looks very much like a strategic approach where they're just trying to block the process. And they've been actually, unfortunately for us, very successful at doing that.
We spoke about this before. Do you think the claim is so high because they want to essentially block out the potential future value of the entire holding?
Well, if you think that the trustee holds assets, it's in Bitcoin, so it fluctuates, the value fluctuates. But roughly speaking, it's about $1.5 billion. Now, if you see there's a bankruptcy that has $1.5 billion worth of money that it can pay to the people it owes, and you choose to go into that process saying, well, I want $16 billion, clearly you can understand that you're not going to get $16 billion, but clearly there's some thought processes that's gone into that. They haven't just stumbled across a number. So I don't know what the thought processes are in their heads, but I'm sure people listening to this can form their own views.
I mean, my view would be that, you know, at $20,000, that's potentially $6 billion of assets. And if Bitcoin were to go on to run to 50,000, it seems like they've almost tried to protect themselves, knowing how long the process could take, that whatever happens to the price, they've covered the whole lot.
Yeah, I did. I mean, the number 16 billion coincides with $20,000, the all-time high for Bitcoin price, multiplied by 800,000 Bitcoin, which is the total amount of Bitcoin being claimed by creditors. So it's almost like they've chosen a number, or they happen to have chosen a number that matches exactly the amount of total that the best case claim that all creditors put together could have. So what that does practically, and no one really, you know, no one imagined that they would do this. No one saw this coming. We've really been blindsided by this. But what that means practically for the trustee is that when it comes to holding this vote that we all agree this is how the civil rehabilitation process is going to go through, he has to attribute voting rights. And those voting rights are based on the size of your claim. So for my claim, it's however many calculates back to yen, and that's what my vote is worth in that process. So if you're a big creditor, you get more say in how things are done. But if you're a creditor that has basically 16 times more voting power than everybody else combined, then clearly you get to dictate. And until that case is settled, until the trustee is able to say, okay, I'm rejecting 100% of this, or I'm rejecting 99% of it, or I'm accepting the whole lot, or whatever the decision is going to ultimately be, and we can talk about that as well. But until the trustee is in a position where he can say, this is actually what CoinLab's claim is worth, and therefore they get this many voting rights in the next stage of the process, then the trustee is blocked. I mean, with the best will in the world, he can't move forward, because he can't just assign. You know, what happens in situations like this traditionally in Japanese bankruptcies, when it's the corner shop that goes bankrupt and there's four people arguing over it and one has a disputed claim, which is what CoinLabs is, then the judge will say, all right, well, your disputed claim, we don't know whether it's going to win or lose, so we'll give you 50% voting rights, and that allows us to, it's rough justice, and that allows us to carry on the process. But with CoinLab's claim, even if you give them 50% of their voting rights, they still have 8 times more voting power than everybody else combined. So it makes a mockery of the process, and it's ground us to a halt. So that's frustrating, because the deadline was the end of April. How long it's going to take is a real question. The truth is, nobody knows. And I've got my views, and they are my opinions and views, and I want to make that clear to anyone that's listening to this and thinking about what their options are, that I'm offering this as a personal set of views. I don't want I could well be wrong, but my view is that it's going to take between at least 18 to 24 months. There's a good chance it'll take longer than that. I don't want anyone to think, okay, well, based on that, I'm going to make big financial decisions in my life. And then it turns out it only takes 3 weeks, or it ends up taking 10 years or something like that. But, you know, who knows, that could happen. And then people are saying, oh, wait, Andy Pag said that it was going to take 2 years and it's all his fault. So just...
That's a fair disclaimer.
As long as people kind of are willing to listen to what I'm saying in that context, then I'm happy to sort of share my view, which is I think it's going to take a couple of years to get to that process. Now, I did think originally, I did have a suspicion that something like this might happen. But the process CoinLab has to go through. At the moment, they're in a process called assessment or reassessment, where they've made a claim and the trustee on his own has looked at it and they've rejected it and said, no, we're not having any of that. And then CoinLab have a right to say, okay, well, I don't think you've looked at this fairly. So now we're going to put it in front of a judge. And this is within the bankruptcy proceeding. So it's not litigation, but it's a process of submission. So first of all, CoinLab make a submission to the judge saying, well, this is why we should have our claim accepted. And the trustee looks at that and there's a period of time. And the trustee then replies, well, this is why that's a little rubbish and they shouldn't have it. And then CoinLab gets it. And this process can go backwards and forwards for, there's no specific deadline as far as I can tell. It goes backwards and forwards until everybody is satisfied. And the judge makes a ruling. Now, previously under bankruptcy, they were arguing over presumably the same legal points. And that process had been going on for 4 years. They'd already been the reason, or one of the main reasons, for holding up bankruptcy for 4 years. So we've already done 4 years of this. Now, the trustee said at the meeting, we're not going to start from the beginning because we've already done that. So we're underway. My view is, based on having spoken to our lawyers, they said, well, you know, it can take 2 months, it could take 6 months. You know, actually, who knows? The other thing CoinLab have done is that they've requested the court seal all the paperwork relating to these submissions backwards and forwards. So no one else can see what arguments they're making and make any kind of judgment of like, well, is this close to conclusion or is this going to take forever? The trustee is in a position where he can't sort of say to one set of creditors, i.e. us, hey, everyone, don't worry, it's almost over. Or, hey, guys, this is going to take forever, because he has to be neutral. You know, he has to respect the fact that while CoinLab have a disputed claim, he has to treat them the same as another creditor until their claim is rejected, and then he can disregard their interest. So the trustee isn't allowed to tell us. CoinLab have requested that the court seal all the paperwork. So we've got no way of really judging what stage this is at, what merits the legal arguments that are being made are being submitted. We're completely in the dark, which is a really, really frustrating process. I've made a request to our lawyer that they unseal those paperwork, but actually we don't have any standing really to do that. So we don't know how long that's going to take. I spoke to Mark about this. He reckons it might take up to a year, Mark Coppellers. And he's, you know, he's pretty well connected in these issues. I had a conversation with our lawyer and said, well, you know, so once they've been through this reassessment process, what happens then? And if that's rejected at the end of, let's say it's 6 months or 9 months or whatever it is, if it's rejected at that stage, then they can move to litigation. So the difference is that they're basically arguing out in a courtroom rather than with written submissions. And the other difference is that CoinLab then have to pony up some money in order to be able to do that. They have to pay court fees. Now, initially, my conversation with our lawyer a while back, I said, well, what kind of money are we talking about? And he kind of just did on the fly a rough calculation, said it's about $15 million. And I thought, well, okay, but that's all right, because there's no way CoinLab have that sort of money to throw around at what is the pretty speculative size claim. So when that time comes, I was thinking, okay, what they'll do is they'll shrink their claim down. They'll just drop a few of the more sort of spurious bits, of the more unlikely to win bits. They'll probably drop those and they'll kind of bring it back down to around 75 million like it was before and argue over that. And that will reduce their court fees and it will allow them to sort of do it. But if they bring it back to 75 million, they won't be holding the rest of the process up, because at 75 million, you can kind of give some voting rights, or you can do something that is, you know, again, rough justice, but it would allow us to continue on in the process.
I guess with that, it feels like they probably want some kind of out-of-court settlement.
I think there's a good likelihood of that, yeah. I think I tell you, remind me of that in a second. I'll just finish off on this point that I was making about the 75 million. Actually, what I found out when we were in Japan, I sat down with the lawyers and we did the calculation a lot more accurately. And what I've realized is that for very little money, for about $400,000, $500,000, they can probably still put in a claim, maybe not 16 billion, but around 1 billion or 2 billion, that is still big enough to hold the process up. So I don't think we're going to get to that stage. If they choose to go to litigation, I think that they will choose a litigation fee, a claim value, rather, I should say, that is affordable in terms of litigation fee, but big enough that it still holds the process up. And precisely for the reason you're saying, which is, I think ultimately, the trustee has looked at this. I think the trustee has done a really good job of being a neutral arbiter during these first processes, because he doesn't have any interest in rejecting a claim that's valid. You know, his job is to neutrally look at the claims that are put in front of him. And he's looked at the one that CoinLab have come up with. He's had his commission independent expert, a legal opinion on the key issue, which is whether or not they were licensed to perform the money transfer activities that they did. And when he looks at it in a neutral light, the answer is no, look, you don't have a leg to stand on. So when it goes to litigation, then I think he can be a bit more aggressive. But when you say, you know, like I say, he has no interest in rejecting a claim that is valid. So I kind of feel like, in a way, I'm confident that the fact that he's looked at it and rejected it means that it doesn't have grounds. Are they looking for a settlement? That's a pretty reasonable conclusion to come to, I think. I've had a conversation both in private and online with CoinLab's US lawyer, a guy called Edgar Sargent. And his take on it is, look, this is a valid claim. This is a valid case. It started before Mt. Gox were worth gazillions. We're not ambulance chasers. There's a breach of contract that's happened here. The liquidation damages that are specified in the contract. My client has suffered damages. And he deserves recompense. And you listen to him and you think, okay, well, maybe it isn't as cut and dry as that. But then you also think, well, hang on, why have you put this $16 billion claim in there? It just makes no sense at all. And in fairness to Sargent, he is the US lawyer. And what he says is that he's not responsible for the strategy in Japan. And there's a different lawyer in Japan called Wada, who is the one that's managing that part of the lawsuit, and so he kind of, that's where he sort of stops short of saying any more. I did speak to him. I said, well, look, the trustee isn't going to sort of get into discussing settlements with you, because he's looked at it in a neutral light and he doesn't think you have grounds. So it makes it very difficult for him to then go to the court and say, I don't think these guys have a leg to stand on, but we should give them $10 million or $20 million or whoever knows what this number is going to be. I think it's very hard for him to justify that to the court. And also puts him in a difficult position that if he does that, there are 25,000 creditors, some of whom will say, hang on a minute, that was completely unjustified. And I am now going to sue the trustee. The trustee has to tread a very, very neutral line in this. He's going to be very lucky to get out of this whole process without being sued by someone at some stage. So I think he's in a difficult position to be able to negotiate that deal. And so I said to Sargent, I said, look, if you have a number in mind, maybe I can act as a sort of bridge between the trustee and the creditors, and maybe between us, if you can sort of give me a number that you and the trustee can agree on, I can put that to creditors through Mt. Gox Legal and see what the response is. And if there is a consensus, then I can pass that consensus back to the trustee, and that gives him a little safety blanket to say, well, I agreed this settlement, and here's why I agreed this settlement, because the creditors gave me the green light to. So that sort of gives him a little bit of protection if someone eventually does come after him and say, well, I'm going to sue you because you shouldn't have made that deal with CoinLab. However, the practicalities of that is that Sargent doesn't trust me to be a go-between and intermediary, quite right. The trustee isn't in a position where he can treat me, a creditor, with any more and give me any more information than he's giving anyone else. And thirdly, the creditors, we run a poll on the forum saying, how much money would you think is reasonable for for us to sort of put aside as a settlement for CoinLab. And the big answer was it was a massive resounding fuck you, Peter. We're not giving you a penny. So actually, you know, that whole exercise, I did try and sort of see if there was a way of carving a route through there, but there absolutely isn't that I can see.
I do worry that someone would turn around and say, look, let's settle. And I'm with you. I just think, fuck you. No way. Do not do this deal. You know, nobody is behind him. Nobody supports him. To be honest, you're the only person who's been fair enough to try and even consider why he might have a fair claim. And yet at the same time, you don't agree. So no, I don't. I would hate for there to be some settlement.
I mean, I think in terms of, you know, does he deserve it? The answer I would say is no. But there's another question, which is, you know, the guy stood in front of you and you're trying to get past. So do you just kind of reluctantly reach into your pocket and give him something to get out of the way? And you know, then it's a question of how much. Well, okay, if you say, had the thought, well, let's give him, supposing he would accept $10 million, which I don't think he would. I think he's expecting a lot more than that at this stage. Suppose you said $10 million. That sounds like an obscene amount of money to give someone that's essentially holding up. In practical terms, what does that mean for creditors? It's a tiny, tiny portion. I think it's a hundredth of a percent. I mean, you know, you wouldn't even notice it in your payout. But equally, it would sting on a point of principle. So then you come down to this question, well, you know, do I want to be proved right, or do I just want to be happy and get on with my life? And I think it does feel like such a shakedown that a lot of creditors are just like, no, this is a point of principle. We are not relenting to this guy. But the flip side of that is, okay, well then buckle in, because you're going to be sitting in the waiting room for, you know, potentially a couple of years, potentially longer. So there are different, you know, I say creditors as a whole, but there are different views amongst creditors. Not everybody said that they would completely reject any settlement out of hand. You know, there were various different figures. I think it was about 44% said not a penny. That was by far the largest quorum.
What kind of settlement did some people kind of band about that they might be okay with?
Let me just look it up here in a sec. I'll just log in and... musical interlude while I type away. I think I'm just going to talk in, if I can find it, I'm just going to talk in vague terms, because this is kind of information that's on the forum for members, and there will be a time when we pass this to the trustee and it will be for him. So I'm just going to talk in vague terms. So it's around, yeah, so just under half would say nothing. It's actually 48%. Sort of 5 million, 10 million, there's a sort of a small spread of that sort of order of magnitude.
Right, okay.
And actually, just to qualify those numbers, that was a poll that we actually started about a year ago.
Right.
That we're just revisiting, and people are sort of just coming back to it and changing their opinions and voting. So that's a kind of dynamic result that you've got there.
Did you meet up with Mark while you were there?
I did.
How is he?
I know where this question is going.
No, actually, I'm just interested in how he is. Obviously, he's, you know, had his case was essentially settled.
Got
his verdict.
So he got a verdict. He was found guilty, but he was given a suspended sentence.
Which felt about right.
Guilty of data manipulation. Yes and no. I went to see him, and I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, well, now that pressure's relieved, there may be sort of bits of information that he's been holding on to that for various legal reasons he wasn't allowed to share with us. So I just went with the intention of, you know, let's have a coffee together and chew the fat and just kind of keep that relationship warm and then see where that goes. I've always found with Mark that he kind of alludes to having some, you know, key piece of information that will be very helpful, and then it never materializes. And I always kind of put that down to, okay, well, he's a bit of a quirky personality, and, you know, he's got this legal case going on, and there are other things in his life. And there's always what seemed to be a way of justifying why, you know, all right, well, maybe I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that's not how. But I saw a really different side to him. I think he's just a real kind of almost Jekyll and Hyde kind of side to him. I went along, like I say, thinking we're going to have coffee and donuts and just chew the fat. And he sat me down in front of a screen and said, right, Andy, this is my plan here. This is what we're going to do. And I listed a little bit of the outline of the plan on the forum to members. I don't really want to share it more publicly than that. But the plan itself, I don't think, is a good plan. from creditors' point of view, I don't know. I don't think. I think it creates risks for creditors, and those might be beneficial, but those might also be detrimental. But I think there is an upside for Mark personally, which is why he's pushing it. I don't want to get into the details of that. It's not really fair on Mark. It's his plan. He wants to push it. He should speak about that. What it really gave me, and actually I was quite shocked by the whole experience, what it really gave me is this insight into how Mark works. It's almost like now he's been given his green light from the court. It's almost like he's just reverted to type. And he was talking about sort of moving this debt from here to there and then changing this lawsuit round and then driving this and borrowing some money from this. But, and it was all really kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul stuff. And it kind of meant, all right, well, maybe, you know, there'll be a way of getting rid of CoinLab with money from the Mt. Gox estate, but creditors won't sort of quite, it won't be quite transparent. So they won't see that it's happening. It's in their interests, but, you know, it'll remove the resistance from creditors. And I just thought, this is precisely the sort of mindset, precisely the bullshit mindset that got us all into this mess in the first place. It was you kind of juggling numbers with the kind of, you know, the nominal idea that, yeah, this is good for creditors, but actually who it's most good for is you personally. And actually, it really, I kind of sat there politely and listened and thought about it. And then where I met him was like a good hour out of town. And I ended up walking the way back because I just needed to walk off that kind of frustration and energy of like, what have I just heard? And I certainly don't want to be co-opted into it. And you know, let's give Mark the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, he's trying to find a way of kind of removing the barriers to getting a settlement for people. But actually, I think that comes as a happy side effect for the primary goals of his plan, which is to sort of set himself up on an even keel again. And you know, fair play. You know, he's got to look off. He's got to feed himself and look after his own interests as well. Again, I'm kind of getting sucked into talking about Mark's plan a load more than I want to. It's for him to talk about if he wants to do that. I think but the big take home here was that I just kind of saw this side of Mark, which I think was a real flashback. I think the verdict and the sentencing has maybe emboldened him back to a point where he is just, you know, learned nothing from this whole process.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought, you know, he's got his suspended sentence, right? The best thing for him to do is step away from everything. You know, if he needs to sign papers or anything because there's a part of the due process, but he should not be involved in any part of the planning or any part of what's going on now. He should just step away because, you know, he's kind of got himself a bit of a pass now to get on with his life. If he wraps himself up in this, he's only adding risk to his own credibility again.
Yeah. I did have a similar conversation with him a year or even maybe longer ago when he was trying to put forward a civil rehabilitation plan, which was going to cost 300, 400 million or something like that, which then turned out to be completely unnecessary. And I don't think he realized that investment was unnecessary. And he was thinking of doing some sort of coin startup at one point relating to it. But I did have that same conversation to him. Like, Mark, you're not the appropriate person to be leading any kind of recovery plan. You know, and how can you not see that? How can you not? And for your own interest, like exactly as you say, Peter, for your own interest, just kind of take a step back and say, look, I'm just going to be below the radar here and get on with my own life.
Yeah, that's a shame to hear that. So I guess you left that. You had your long walk and you got your flight home. Had a lot of thinking to do, right?
Yeah, and so I've made this decision to sell my claim, and it certainly wasn't an easy decision.
Well, there's two things there, though, Andy. There's selling the claim and stepping down as a, you know, as leading the creditors in some way. Is it essentially the same decision to do both at the same time?
Yeah, I think one comes hand in glove with the other, because I don't think, well, for a number of reasons, I don't think you can be a representative of the creditors without actually being a creditor. I mean, firstly, you don't have any standing, so you know, I wouldn't even be able to meet with the trustee or go to the creditors meeting. I mean, it's not like there's any security and anyone checks ID, but strictly speaking, you can't go to the creditors meeting unless you're a creditor. So I wouldn't be able to stand up and ask questions and interrogate the process. So they kind of, not having any standing limits me. I think the appetite from the members of the group. Actually, I may have misjudged this, but I assumed that they would be quite clearly adamant that, look, if you're not in it with us, then you can't lead us. Actually, I've been really surprised. There's been a really positive, and we're really, really touched by just a lot of impromptu messages just to say, you know, thanks for everything you've done so far, and it's a real shame you're stepping down. So, you know, maybe on that front, it could carry on. But the third thing as well is, for me personally, you know, that without, you know, I'm putting a lot of effort into this because I know at the end of the day there was going to be this payout. It's hard to be as motivated about Japanese bankruptcy process unless you're sort of financially, you know, financially engaged in the upside of it. So I think for me, just to be motivated, you know, and you know, there's a lot of upsides to walking away from this process in sort of intangible ways. There's a lot of kind of, you know, conversations and people that I don't, you know, that I never particularly relished, that I don't have to engage with anymore. I can just kind of get on with other things in my life. So that's the other upside.
I guess if your decision is to sell your claim first, then I can understand why, you know, you want to step down as representing the creditors. But if it was the other way around, right, so if you said, look, this is too much stress, I want to get on with my life, you still could have held on to your claim, right? So...
No. Yes. So, yeah. So, yeah.
So I guess the let's deal with them both. Let's first...
I mean, it's a reluctant byproduct of selling my claim that I have to step down. You know, I actually do. You know, for all the bitching and moaning that I do about it, I do actually really enjoy. I set this organization up with the help of a handful of other people, and we've seen it grow from the very inception. You know, from day one, it was clearly going to be a very popular and necessary thing. There was a big demand for it, and it's grown, and it's, you know, it's really wonderful how cohesive a group we are when you consider how diverse a group we are. So it's something that I am very proud of, and something I will, you know, always boast about. And it's very hard to walk away from that. But at the same time, I just think there is the prospect that this is going to go on for another 2 years.
Of course, I think.
In practical terms, for Mt. Gox Legal, you know, this is a decision for whoever kind of takes over running the group. But from my perspective, it feels like there is very little that we can do. We really are in a logjam here, and we just have to wait it out and let the trustee and CoinLab fight it out and see what way they can find it. And for what it's worth, the trustee is definitely on side. You know, he wants this matter sorted as quickly as possible. He said as much at the creditors meeting. He's working really hard and as fast as possible to get this done. You know, what that means, what that translates to in practical terms, I don't know. And the longer this process goes on for, the more it's at risk, I feel as well. This is really the thing that tipped me over the balance. You know, there are a lot of opportunities in this process for investment firms, investment funds with money that coming at this completely dispassionately about whether they care about creditors or not, and just saying, where's there an interesting opportunity here? You know, where can I stick $1 million and, you know, into this process with a good chance of recovering a healthy return? And there are some opportunities in this process, which if people come along with that mindset, you know, if they spot those opportunities, they will hold the process up even more, or they will cause they will risk the amount of funds available to creditors at the end to shrink in some way, shape or form. So the longer this goes on and the more it's worth, you know, as the price of Bitcoin goes up, the more it's going to get onto people's radars, then I think the more of a risk there is for us creditors sitting there patiently waiting. You know, and like I say, we're helpless in the process at this stage. I don't think there's anything that we can do to speed things up or to get them to leapfrog forward.
Have you ever revealed the size of your claim?
It's around 100. You can look me up on there. There's a list that's going that's sort of publicly available, not informally publicly available, but there's a list of all the creditors under bankruptcy. My claim's 104 bitcoins.
All right. Okay. So you've sold that for $64,000.
62. Yeah, so it's like 62, something like that.
Okay. So I've got a few questions around that. So you know, that's quite considerably below the price of what Bitcoin is now, and almost certainly well below what it would be, say, if it settles in a couple of years. I guess you've just... So there's a couple of questions there. The people who are buying the claim are hedging risk, right? They're buying the yep. risk. But they're buying the risk at, what's that, about 20% of the price now? Even less.
There's some really good guys in the forum that have done a lot of work with all the numbers. And if the trustee settled tomorrow, it would be, it's roughly about, I don't know, it's about half, maybe a little, I'm getting a little bit more than half. That's if the trustee settled tomorrow and everything worked out perfectly. So the risks are that clearly the trustee is not going to settle tomorrow when nobody knows. What the price of Bitcoin will be when he sells, nobody knows. My calculation is, for me, this has always been a big chunk of money hanging over me. Mm-hmm. And when it lands, things in my life are going to be very different.
Yeah.
And the thought that the uncertainty over that is actually quite sort of costly in terms of how I can live my life. So I've already had like a good 18 months of like, put that on hold, because when this money drops, it's going to be great. Put that on hold. No, we won't do that yet. And all of that. And just getting rid of that uncertainty for me personally is a big bonus of like, okay, it's not the windfall I thought, but it's still a windfall. And it's a windfall at the end of this month. And it's definitely coming on this date.
Right.
And then I can start those things. So that is worth a lot to me.
Yeah.
In terms of, the other calculation is, basically, they are, you know, the people that would buy a claim are buying a long-term futures contract for Bitcoin, and they're getting it at, you know, a discounted price, but they're going to have to wait for an unknown amount of time. And then when that happens, Bitcoin will be at a price. Who knows what that is? Maybe it'll be $50,000. Maybe it'll be $300. Who knows?
Yeah.
That is their risk to take. My calculation is that I'm better off with that cash. I can spend some of it on doing the things I want to do, and I can put a little bit of it back into Bitcoin, and I can watch the markets. And I, you know, I'm not the world's best trader. God knows. I put my money in Mt. Gox. So there you go. That tells you everything you need to know. But, you know, I figure in the meantime, between now and date X, whenever it is that the trustee pays out, I think the market will have fluctuated up and down enough that I, you know, with a bit of a sort of attentive trading, I could probably end up, that's my little personal challenge, which is, you know, can I come out on top just out of a sense of pride? Because there has been a bit of a backlash about, oh, you're selling out, you know. Yeah, I am selling out. Thanks, I want to get on with my life. But there is a little bit of pride of like, and I've been called, oh, it's the stupidest decision, you how can you be so dumb, that kind of thing. And so that's kind of rankered with me a bit, and there is this sort of little sense of pride about, all right, well, let's see just how stupid it is. Let's see if I can actually lose even more by trying to trade on the Bitcoin price. But let's see if I can actually make it financially, so that I'm not losing as much of that discount. So there's also interesting guys that are interested in buying it. They initially kind of, the price was around 4,000. It had been steady at 4,000 for 2 months or whatever, and they said, look, we'll just come in at 15%. And I think what they were thinking is, if it drops a little bit below, we'll be able to sort of save a few pennies. If it goes a little bit higher, then whatever. And then literally the next day, it went up to 5,000 overnight. And they were like, yeah, we can't honor that, because they're not, you're not kind of selling. I've deleted it now, and it's wonderful. But for a long time, up until last week, I had this little spreadsheet on my phone that looked up the price of Bitcoin and calculated exactly what my claim was worth if it was settled today. And I would look at it in the morning, and if it had gone up from the day before, I would be happy. And if it had gone down, I would be grumpy. And that made no sense, because that money isn't coming today or tomorrow. It's coming at some point in the future. And the price of fluctuations of Bitcoin today have, you know, just no, absolutely no bearing on what that will be at some point in the future. So these guys are a dollar fund, and they said, well, we can't just suddenly increase our, you know, our offer by 20% because the price of Bitcoin has gone up today. It will be back down again, you know, maybe or maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess where I got confused is because I saw it per coin, but as I remember, even though your claims are 104 coins, there isn't actually the equivalent 104 coins there, right? It's a proportion.
That's right. Yeah. So there's I think the trustee has 140,000 bitcoins, and there's 800,000 bitcoins worth of claims. Mm. But then the trustee also has some cash, and there are some cash claims, and there's a there's a sort of logic of how the trustee will distribute the assets they have. And when you kind of calculate it, well, so he has to distribute cash to the fiat claims first, and that's a byproduct of the fact that we're moving from bankruptcy to civil rehabilitation. So once all the fiat claims are settled and they get an interest payment as well, then everything that's left is divided up by whoever, all the Bitcoin claims. And that works out, depending on how the maths goes, somewhere between 15% and 18%. That's assuming there aren't any other black swans waiting on us. This whole thing has just been a flock of black swans, you know, these kind of unexpected events which have massive financial implications, like the most trusted exchange in the world, crypto exchange in the world that handles 7% of all Bitcoins goes bust. Who would ever have seen that coming? Well, maybe people did, but anyway. And then a bankruptcy which suddenly has more assets than it has liabilities. Who would ever have seen that coming? Then a claim which goes from 75 million to 16 billion. Who would ever have seen that coming? And I just think, you know, if this goes on for another 2 years, there's going to be other stuff that like, oh crap, didn't think that was going to happen. Who'd have guessed that was going to happen? So there's a number of reasons there that are all sort of bundled in together. And for me personally, I have to stress as well, I'm not making any kind of recommendation to anyone else. This is how it works out for me in my life. The information I'm sharing here, I didn't really want to do this interview. We were exchanging emails last night, and you said, and I said, no reason to do an interview. I don't have a book to sell, or, you know, I'm not promoting anything. And you quite rightly said, well, I think it would be a useful thing for creditors to sort of understand the reasoning and the logic. And then they can sort of use that information to make their own judgment. And I think that's actually the only reason why I'm doing this interview. My best-selling book on Amazon, How I Lost a Load of Money on Mt. Gox, is not available in the shops yet. So I got nothing to sell other than to share a bit of information. And I kind of feel like I'm happy to do that for the creditors. I've been quite a sort of central person, and I've spoken to, you know, privately and through the forum with an awful lot of people, so I'm more than happy to share my thinking. There's been a little bit of a backlash, not a lot of people, but quite a vocal backlash of, you know, kind of selling out, and this is a really bad idea. And look, you know, if I think that's kind of driven by a sense of frustration, and I've kind of had this throughout the process, that people kind of direct their frustration at the process at me because I'm the one delivering the news. And that, you know, there is this sense of frustration of, look, we're supposed to, on that little spreadsheet on my phone, it says that it's worth this much today. Why isn't someone appreciating that and offering me that much for it, or offering me something close to that much? And any offer that doesn't sort of get close to it is someone that's lowballing and they're trying to rip me off. And there is this kind of, I kind of get that frustration. I've been through it. I know it as well. But I'm kind of a little bit tired of it being directed at me. Look, I've looked at it. I'm frustrated by it, but I'm making that decision. You look at it, you're frustrated by it, don't make that decision. That's fine. No one's forcing anyone to sell. Don't do it. You know, if it's not right for you, don't do it. Hold on. And it's just frustrating that it's, you know, there's a wait ahead of us. And my judgment is that that's probably going to be something in the region of 2 years, if not more. Might turn out to be all resolved by the end of this month. Who knows? Or it might take 10 years.
Yeah, but it's been more than just a job, right? It's not just been a job. It's kind of become almost like a mission and a duty. And I guess it's swallowed up a large percentage of your life, but also a large percentage of your thinking, of your mind. You're a journalist, but also I imagine you're not just a journalist. You're a creative as well. And when this all consumes you, what else can you work on? What else you can do? You know, I don't feel like you should feel bad about stepping down if you do in any way. I get why there's, you know, of course there's going to be a backlash, because no decisions has binary support with these things. There's different people with different views, but I don't think people probably understand how much this has consumed you over the last few years.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think what I find kind of really enjoyed about the process, and what I've found fascinating, is the kind of structuring consensus and communicating with groups. And that is related to communicating to a big group of people. How do I help them understand the dilemma we face and direct their energies at where the problem is.
Ironic, really.
You know, that is actually what I've really enjoyed about this process. You know, do I enjoy reading Japanese legal statutes? No. Do I enjoy flying 12 hours on a plane to Tokyo and being jet lagged for a week, coming back and being jet lagged for another week? Absolutely not. You know, do I enjoy meeting people who I share this experience with of having lost all this money and being close to that windfall? And then that I really do, that I'm really going to miss. And actually, that's one big regret, is that I was looking forward to that day where everybody starts on the forum posting, oh my God, I just got my payment through from the trustee. Oh wow, this is brilliant. And then everybody piles in, yeah, me too. You know, I could picture that day. I could imagine it in my head. And I was so excited and looking forward to not just getting this windfall, but us getting this windfall together. And I just can't, and I'm just now at a point where I just don't know when that day is going to come, you know, and I just can't see it. I can't visualize it anymore. But so my passion is in that, but I've never kind of felt that I am on some sort of justice crusade, that I was wronged and the whole world has to sort of mold to accept that, when the trustee has to pay us out and that will be my vindication. This was an investment. You know, I thought Bitcoin sounded like a cool thing. I put a bit of money in it back in 2013. And then it kind of grew to this huge sum of money. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. What am I going to do with it? And then it disappeared again. And it's, oh, it's gone. And so I think for a lot of people, being a Mt. Gox customer that got goxed, it is an identity, and they're in it. And then there's a fair amount of sort of principle involved. I want justice to be done. And that looks like me getting the payout I deserve. And I can totally understand that. But for me, it's not. For me, it was an investment. You know, it was a curious investment decision that's actually done really well. And I think back to the amount of money that I first sent to Mt. Gox, and what I'm going to get at the end of this month. I'm doing over whatever it is, a 6-year period. I'm doing very, very well. Thank you very much. That's a really good investment, any way you look at it. That's it. So I get why people are kind of tribal about this, and there's almost this kind of identity politics, tribalism around it. And that's fine. You know, if you can afford to stand on principle, then I absolutely respect it. But for me, it's about the money. And you know, this is a way out. It's not the optimum solution. You know, great, I would much prefer to have the full windfall, but I'm kind of taking a reluctant, pragmatic approach to that.
So what now? You know, obviously you've got a process of stepping away, but what are you going to do now, mate?
The forum are in the process of going through finding someone to take over as coordinator. Some really good candidates in the forum, some really good people. So I'm very confident that it will be well managed. I think it'll be down to them. I don't think it's sort of really appropriate for me to sort of say what happens next. I think the consensus seems to be, though, that they're going to look at some kind of low activity over the next few months, while we sort of see if we can get some kind of time frame on how long this next phase might take. And I would say that if you are a Mt. Gox creditor and customer, then it is really well worth joining the forum, because Mt. Gox Legal Forum, mtgoxlegal.com, because it is just a kind of wealth of information. And I kind of see it, because I'm across, there's a Reddit forum and there's a Telegram group as well. And I just see the kind of difference in the level of discussion on the forum, where people are getting some really good level of quality information, and these other platforms where people are kind of second guessing and putting bits together. And I would just really love to see creditors, you know, having the benefit of that information. And that's why the series of podcasts you did last month, whenever it was, really, really helpful in that light. Hopefully this podcast adds to that as well. So if you're not already a member of Mt. Gox Legal, I just think for $100, which is unfortunately the have to charge something, and that goes into a fund which pays for legal fees and the website and managing the group and all the rest of it, is, you know, it's well worth it's well worth your money to think about that if you're going to stick with it. And if you're going to sell, the guys that are selling, the agreement I've signed with them, I'm not allowed to say who it is, but if people want to, they can contact me. I'll put them in touch, and then they can figure out the details from that as well.
Cool. But you know, personally, career wise, any plans or just take a holiday?
Yeah, well, actually, this weekend I'm getting the camper van out of storage. Sweet. And Julie, my partner, and me, we're planning on heading down to northern Spain and Portugal for a few weeks. She's just finished her job, so it just kind of coincides that we've got a bit of time to take. I'm a really bad kite surfer, which I thought was really cool. Actually, I've been telling all my friends that, oh yeah, I'm into kite surfing, and I thought that was really cool. And then I realized that kite surfing is the new golf. There's all these kind of middle-aged businessmen and they used to, who were not, you know, that generation when I was a kid, they would all meet at the golf course and that's where they would do their business deals. And now they're all going kite surfing and then doing their business deals as they change out of their wetsuits at the back of the car. So that's kind of taking the sheen off kite surfing for me a little bit, but I still really enjoy it. So a little bit kite surfing. Julie's big into paddle boarding. We're both terrible surfers. So we're going to take the camper van down to the Atlantic coast in Portugal and find a few little spots on the beach to sort of camp up on, and a bit of a digital detox. Julie's very keen for us to walk the Camino to Santiago, so a bit of a kind of just a kind of reconnection with each other and with I don't want to sound like a hippie now, but just a reconnection with the world and switch the phone off for a bit. That all sounds very good.
And do you have any ideas career wise what the next step is for you? Back to journalism?
There's a sort of few projects. I mean, there's all the Brexit stuff that's happening. I think it's quite interesting. I was involved just kind of part-time helping, volunteering for a, God, I don't know if I want to get into this, but I was volunteering for a People's Vote campaign group here in Northern Ireland where I live. And it looks like, you know, the prospects of some kind of vote, whether it's a general election or a confirmatory vote on Brexit, that's looking more and more likely. So if there's a, you know, campaign that springs out of that, then I think I'd like to sink my teeth into that. I feel like it's, I'm going to get so much backlash, but I don't care. I feel like it's my patriotic duty to try and stop the madness that is happening in this country at the moment.
Oh, well, we won't get into that because...
yeah, right. Like, it's not controversial enough.
Well, do you know what? I voted to remain, and I was on the fence. I think it's one of these things also. I was talking about it to somebody yesterday. When, in doing what I do, I'm always trying to take both positions. So if I interview somebody, I try and take their side, and then I try and take an opposing view, just to try and see what the full picture is, to try and get to the bottom of the story, and to frame my questions. You know, similar as I did with Mark Karpeles. If you know that, and then you go back and listen to the interview, you'll see that I empathise with him, but then I also challenge him. So I do a bit of both. Mm. I kind of found myself with Brexit seeing both sides, and just kind of, I'm now really, really on the fence. But I strangely enough, if there was another vote, I think I would vote Brexit.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, because however screwed up the democratic process is, and however much people will say, you know, well, we didn't know what we were voting for or anything, I kind of feel that we should stick with what we voted for. And I know, and there's a lot of people arguing against me, and I see all their points.
That doesn't seem like how democracy works to me. I mean, like, the sort of people that only give you one vote are the likes of Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi. You know, you get to vote them in, and then that's it. You know, democracy is fluid. It's been 3-4 years. We vote. We have a general election every 4 years. We don't, you know, we're allowed to see how things go and change our minds or stick with it. I don't know. I don't get that logic that a second vote is somehow a denial of democracy, or that it's a failure of politics. I think the clusterfuck that's going on at the moment is the failure of politics. I think the second vote's the only way out of it.
It is a clusterfuck. But to save us having another hour, let's park this for, let's park yeah, this for a coffee. one thing that did, I don't know, have you just seen that Julian Assange has been arrested?
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
They've gone into the Ecuador.
They went into the embassy.
Yeah.
Wow.
They went into the embassy and they've arrested him. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. And
very interesting. Wonder what the legal grounds were that allowed them to do that. I think they're probably invited by the by the Ecuadorians. I think they probably had enough. I don't know. But I'm going to get straight on my phone.
Well, listen, thanks for this, Andy. Have you got any final comments, any closing thoughts you want to add?
No, I can't think of anything. I think we've had a pretty exhaustive... exhaustively covered it all. I suppose the last thing is I just wish people well, whatever they decide, whether they're going to sell or hold. I just really hope, a few people have kind of said like, oh, that's a dumb decision, Bitcoin price is going to go up to 100,000 and we're going to do really well out of it. I really hope that's true. I really hope that whatever decision people make, it works for them and it's the right one for them and that they're successful at it. I think customers of Mt. Gox have been through the ringer and been played by a number of people over the course of these last 5 years, and they really do deserve to have a nice juicy payout at the end of it, and I really hope they get that. So I just wish everybody well, really, whatever they decide.
Well, look, I appreciate you coming on again, and just stay in touch. I wish you all the best, mate, and I appreciate everything you've done to help me get the series out before, and this will go up on Saturday, and I assume we won't speak about this again, but we should definitely meet up and have a chat about various things.
Looking forward to that. I'm counting on it.
All right, mate. Well, listen, enjoy the trip with your partner, Julie. I think you're going to have a lovely break. I'm a little bit jealous, but have a great time.
Okay, all the best.